This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here in Fort Worth. Ah, yes, where the guitars hang on the wall, where instruments beckon from every corner of the room, just to be plucked out and played as inspiration flows through you. But are we just a studio, a highly professional studio? Yes, indeed. But you might be saying to yourself, Phil, oh, I just got a few songs, you know, I'm not real serious about it. Or you might be thinking, Phil, I've already sold millions of records, I'm looking for a new direction. Whichever you are, rest assured, Trinidad is here for you. All you got to do is call me, 817-733-5256, come record here, Trinidad. Or as always, book Phil Pritchett and the full band. Call that same number or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Oh, it's that time of year where we're starting to line up some holiday parties. We already got several private parties booked in November, December, January. But dates remain, rest assured, whether you're doing a poolside Christmas gathering and you just think, man, why can't I have Phil and Blue and the guys over here, you know, by the fire pit, just rocking out at my Christmas party. If that would just make your party memorable and beautiful, we are here for you. Phil@philpritchett.com. Call me, email me, inquire. It's that time of year. How's everybody doing, folks? Phil here. Oh, man, what's on my mind? What's on my mind? I'm talking about some Texas Rangers, dude. Oh, sorry to all you Astros fans out there and people who are out of the loop. Hey, but me and the Rangers have been out of the loop. When did they come to town here? 72? Yeah, man, about 40 years. It's been a long haul. Been a long, tough haul for the Ranger fan. Boy, our former drummer, remember Stuart Wiley, the beloved Stu Wiley, big, bearded, smoking guy. You want to talk about a guy that loves Texas Rangers baseball. Man, long-suffering fan, long-suffering. All those years in the van, dude, you tell me about our farm system and all this. Oh, gosh. You know, and I was a Rangers fan, but come on. You quit listening after a while. You're kind of like, oh, yeah, I've been hearing about this trade for this guy and this pitcher, and, oh, we're going to get this guy this year. But, man, it has been a joy, I'm telling you, to be texting Stuart Wiley during these American League Championship and World Series games every time something good happens for the Rangers. Or every time there's some questionable move, you know, to be texting Stu in Blue. I've got my texting group of about, I don't know, 7 or 8 people that I know are watching the game. Friends of ours, confidants, exchanging thoughts, pitching matchups, etc. Man, it's been so much fun. We'll see what happens there, man. Coming down to it, Rangers a chance to put it away here in the next couple of nights. Very, very exciting up here in the DFW area. So go Rangers. Everyone's very excited about that. Well, what's new, Phil? What's new? Well, man, I had an experience I hadn't had in a while. Went down to play at a private party in Corpus Christi at the beloved Executive Surf Club down there, where Sarah and Dan were married. Thanks, Sarah and Dan, for having us down. But I got to tell you, this was a surprise wedding. Do you hear what I just said? A surprise wedding. You're thinking to yourself, how does that even work? How do you even pull that off? I didn't even know. I got an email saying, hey, you're playing for our wedding, but it's a surprise. Don't tell anybody. So I'm like, oh, my God, who am I going to tell? I didn't even tell the band, really, because I didn't want it to get out. I don't want to be the bum that blew the whole thing. So we get down there. It's during the afternoon, and we just had a fantastic time. So many bands will tell you they hate playing weddings, like original bands like myself, guys who write their own songs. Man, we love nothing more than playing our own songs, than throwing in some Beatles and Stones and Petty and Johnny Cash and God, whatever. We got challenged to play a Jimmy Buffett song the other night, and yours truly, P2, is up there singing Jimmy Buffett. Hey, if you want to see it, hire us for your own party. You won't be seeing it at some Pritchett gig. But I remember the lyrics okay. You know, it was a great time, man. We were just laughing and having a ball at the surf club. And, man, it went off without a hitch. We set up our gear. The bride and the groom had a luncheon or something. You know, they had everybody kind of come to a nice lunch, I think is what they did, early on Saturday. And then kind of said, hey, we're going over to the surf club. We've got some drinks. Everybody needs to go over there to, you know, we're going to have some toasts or something. I don't know. And then, lo and behold, they get there, and they got the preacher there. They say, hey, guess what? This is the wedding. This is it. Stand by. Everyone went crazy. Oh, my gosh. They jump on stage. They get married. Man, I loved it. And then we come rolling out and rock the house for 3 hours. It was great. So if you're thinking about getting married up there and you don't want to put up with your all your in-laws and your mom and your, most time I do a wedding, I get a lot of emails from the, you know, from the mother of the bride. You expect that kind of thing, you know, concerns and this and that and itineraries and stuff. Not this time around, man. Sarah and the whole family down there was just fantastic. We showed up and it couldn't have been more fun or easier. But as an added bonus to our private party exploits down there in Corpus Christi, I look over. What do I see on the schedule? Oh, Whataburger Field. You know that real nice minor league ballpark they got in Corpus Christi? Got a little show down there being put on by my friend Casey Lane, who used to own manage Executive Surf Club, now owns and runs the House of Rock. He's the promoter of the Whataburger Field concert out there, featuring our old friend Robert Earl Keen, Jack Ingram, Reckless Kelly, and others. So I just think, man, I mean, man, being a producer guy now, me, Phil, podcasting, producing, doing my own private party shows, playing gigs and stuff, man, I never get to see any of the old guys anymore. I used to be, we always played shows with Keen and Ingram and Reckless and Ragweed and Pat, and we were always just doing these festivals and shows and open for people and people opening for us. It was always this big brotherhood, this big fraternity on the road. I don't know, as we have all gotten older, we just go to the gig. We don't get to the gig real early. We don't stay late. We all got kids and wives. We play, we go home. It's kind of sad in a way, I admit. So I jumped at the chance because I was going to be done playing at this private party, me and the band, about 7. I go, dude, let's cruise over to Whataburger Field. We'll hang out backstage. We'll kick it like real rock and rollers back there. Hang out on the bus. Watch the Ranger game that was going on, the World Series game. And so we did, man. Went over there and had a great time. Saw all the guys. Had a great talk with Ingram was there, of course. Watched Jack's whole show. Of course, my very good friend Pete Coton, he plays drums for Jack. So I stood right behind Pete's drum kit throughout Jack's set there at Whataburger Field. So that was a lot of fun. It was great watching Pete Coton play the drums. Gosh, he just had the spiky hair, the short sleeve flannel plaid shirt, black tie with the short sleeve, tight leather kind of vest. Just looking like Ron Wood of the Stones, man. Just looking better, playing better with age. Pete Coton, the podcast's own Pete Coton. Talking to me, of course, everybody goes, man, I need to come back on your show. I need to come back. I got so much I want to talk about. So Pete will be coming back on the show here. And I've even talked to Jack's guitar player, Frenchie, left-handed Frenchie, actually from France, you know. great guy. He's even talking about coming in here, and we're going to do a project here, about a 5-song EP, I think. Frenchie, Pete, and I. Maybe even Kenley Wolfe, who was playing bass with Jack that night. Kenley Wolfe, remember him? Dude, he played with the Cult. Remember the Cult? Wildflower, I love you every hour. Love removal machine. Oh, what else did they do? She Sells Sanctuary. You know, all those great tunes. Yeah, Kenley was on the road with the Cult forever, so he was, but he's with Jack like 15 years ago or something. So Kenley was kind of picking up a sub gig with Jack, it looked like, so got to see him. He'd be a great guest, man. Tell some On the Road with the Cult stories. Oh, man. But we had a great time hanging out there at Whataburger Field. Our thanks to Casey Lane for having us in. You know, I noticed there was a little reserved backstage. I just remember those backstage deals just being so wild ass, man. You know, just hangers on and people cluttering the stage. You know, I'm just sitting there just kind of drinking my one beer, just standing there on the side of the stage, kind of unmolested. Not a lot of people around, but a good crowd out there. I don't know though, kind of a different feel out there than in years past. It's been a long time since I've been to one. I suspect we're all just getting older. Everybody's headed home or something. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I remember just going to see Keane and stuff, just screaming those songs at the top of my lungs. I guess people still do it, but it seemed like that night was a little reserved. I don't know. You know what? Email me, philpritchard.com. If you've been to one of these festivals in a while, you tell me your take on it. You know, I've talked about before that I see people, you know, come to our shows. We have the same numbers a lot of the times, but you know, people seem a little distracted. They're kind of looking at their phones and wandering around. There doesn't seem to be as much focus on the stage. I don't know. And I'm not complaining. I'm not trying to be Mr. Sourpuss guy. It's just an observation I made. And I made the same observation at Whataburger Field the other night. People were just sort of wandering around in front of the stage and talking and having a good time. But I don't know. It was a little different kind of scene, you know. I don't know. Things are changing. Things are changing out there. Who knows? Who knows? But man, what a great time talking to Jack. He was sitting there. He'd taken his own truck down to the gig, and the band had flown in. So me and Jack just sat there in front of his truck talking for about 30 minutes before we took off. He was funny, though. Jack just going, man, look at all these younger guys, man. Look what they're doing these days. There's something to that effect, you know. We were just talking about when we got going, how there was no Texas radio, no Texas music chart. There weren't even places to play besides, like, fraternity houses. Jack's like, yeah, man, you and me were out there chopping down the freaking weeds, man. That was my favorite quote of the night. Me and Jack out there hacking down the weeds for all to follow. I like that. I like that image of myself, hacking my way into the brush. Well, man, to tell you the truth, I still feel like I'm out there in the brush, hacking away, looking for a trail. Ah, the trail disappeared long ago, my friends. Long ago. But you have one decision. You can either just sit down in the weeds and curl up and die, or you can wield that machete and just keep hacking, hoping to come upon a shoreline or a river or another trail. That's what I'm doing. Blazing a trail out there. I hope you are too. Well, we got a special surprise for you here. My old friend Matt Pivato, the great infamous booking agent of Mustang Music Group, has been out of the business for a couple of years. He's been quietly running a bar down there on Lake Bryan. But man, he ran every Ziegenbach Fest. He started all the Ziegenbach festivals. Man, he really booked. He really made Roger Kreger. Was his manager and booking agent for so many years. Man, he was the first booking agent of Corey Morrow and Eli Young and so many others. Randy Rogers kind of got started with him. So a lot of great stories from Matt Pivato, his rise, his fall, his rumored comeback. We're going to talk to Matt all about that in our next segment. Matt Pivato, stay tuned. Can't reach our destination, we're still a ways away, still a ways away. I saw a treehouse on the outskirts of the farm, the power lines have floaters so the airplanes won't get snagged. Sky blue bells ringing and the train. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to every fan in the world. Fan with a PH, of course, huddled over their laptop or their iPhone, perched atop a mountain in Afghanistan or on a ship at sea, or who knows, anywhere else in the globe, you can go to p2podcast.com and join us for this program every week. Thrilled to have you with us, folks. From Trinidad World Recording Studios, well, we are thrilled to have our guest here today, a man who has made many, many friends in this business over the last several years.
Maybe a few enemies.
A few enemies. But I do know this. Every band is going to be calling me going, hey, wait, you finally got a hold of Pivoto? You've got Pivoto there? So all the bands who've been calling Matt Pivoto all these years, a well-known booking agent looking for Pivoto, I can tell him now I've tracked him down. He really is a friend I've had for a long, long, long time. One of the earliest business guys in the whole Texas music red dirt thing as we've come
there,
to know
there
it.
Was no red dirt back.
There was no red dirt.
No.
But please give a hand for my old friend, business partner. A long time, he's been wanting to come on the podcast for so long. The great, the notorious Matt Pivoto joins us here on the P2 Podcast for the first time. He's been telling me for a long time he wants to come on and speak to the people, take it to the people, take it to the fans, set the record straight. That could mean anything. But thanks for coming up today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, man, what's on your – how did you get into booking? Let me just set the stage here. I was playing at Stubbs in Austin, like 1996. I get a call from a fast-talking, slightly drunken-voiced kid going, I got Jerry Jeff and Todd Snyder. You're opening for him. There was something. I'm like, what? Some guy called me for some show. So I played Chris Wall.
I remember this. Wow.
And yes. I think I was supposed to get $800, and I was handed $600. And boy, after that, I just said, man, this guy's a real booking agent.
And I said,
this is what it's all about. I learned everything.
I remember that show like it was yesterday now.
But that was your first. So you were living in Austin then?
No, I was actually.
Where were you?
I was in College Station.
Oh, that's right, College Station.
Going to A&M.
That's right.
I was on my fifth year.
So you went to
went
to Texas A&M.
I went to A&M, and it was. I met Corey Morrow.
That's right. He was one of your first guys, kind of,
yes,
that you ran into.
So I moved to the Tap, which is right next door to – I moved to Sundance Apartments, which is right next door to the Tap. And Corey was playing every Wednesday night. But
yeah.
Mine, Chad Rozelle, said, hey, dude, you got to come check this Corey Morrow guy out.
Right.
So $2 chuggers, and I walked
7 years later.
Oh, jeez.
You should see the look of defeat on his face right now.
Yeah, I walk over to the Tap that Wednesday, August of 96,
yeah,
and there stands Corey Morrow in front of me with Jens Pinkernell and Ryan Leitch.
All 6'10" of Jens Pinkernell.
And Brian Farabee.
And Phil Pritchett in the full band zone, Ryan Leitch.
And Ryan Leitch.
Yeah.
And my life has never been the same.
That was the end of it there.
That was the beginning of the end. There was no beginning. It just started.
It was already
at the
in progress.
End, and it was been a 15-year end.
Slide.
Yes.
But really, honestly,
I started off, I was a big fan of Corey. I was that fan.
Right.
That, you know, that fan.
Sure.
You know that guy.
They've all joined and now left my band.
Yes. That guy. I was that fan.
Says, you're awesome.
That guy.
You're awesome. And I look at him and say, well, can you carry a guitar case or can you pick up those drums?
That's right. And that's what I
do. We love you, Phil. Great. Do you have any food? You know, that's the guy.
Yes.
I'm always looking for it. Gigs.
Yes. Okay. Do you have a place for me to crash?
Right.
That was that guy.
Do you know anyone getting married who has any money?
Yes.
Who wants to hire us?
Absolutely.
So you go on and start selling shirts for Corey, doing his
merch
monkeying.
Fast forward later, 9 months later, I am that fan. So every Wednesday night at the Tap, that's where I was at. Then I'd go Thursday night, hang 'em high in Austin.
Yeah. Can you make the trip? We need somebody.
I was going as a fan,
yeah,
as a super fan.
Okay.
The Band-Aid.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
And then fast forward to May. And of 97, and that's when Corey said, look, I need some help. Mark Schaberg, who now is the GM down at
Brewster Street.
And
but Schaberg started out, he had Popular Talent, the talent agency there in Austin, booking all the party bands.
Absolutely.
And
that was before the internet world really came about. So
he had that paper catalog. Remember, it had all the pictures of the bands and their songs they played?
Yes. I had Corey's, had Ford the Four.
He plays the following songs. The Road Goes On Forever.
Yes.
Amarillo by Morning. And many of his own.
And Corey did this demo tape that he gave to Shaberg that he'd give to the fraternities. Mm-hmm. Just cover bands.
Right.
So, and so Shaberg, anyway, so fast forward to May, and Corey called me up, said, hey, I need some help. And so the first show I worked was May 1st, 1997, Pat and Corey at Burgers and Blues in Waco. And Pat pulled
Burgers and Blues. Oh, that was in the downtown area.
Yes. Yeah. And I never forget, I was with Pat that night. I was in his Yukon, because that's all he could afford was probably 82 Yukon, and we're driving up, and his name wasn't on the marquee.
Pat's wasn't?
No. He wasn't too happy.
Pat was the local guy kind of opening for Corey. I mean, Corey was...
No, it was Pat. It was Corey opening for Pat.
So Pat was sort of the known guy.
Yes, Pat's name was on the marquee. And but I remember that. And that was the beginning of Pat's surge.
Yes.
Into what he is known today. But so that was May. That was May of 97. And and then the next show was... the Firehouse, and then we went over to Vinton, Louisiana.
You know, I had a band in here from Vinton. That's where these guys were from, Vinton, Louisiana.
The Cowboys in Vinton.
Withdrawn, and here recording. Great guys.
And I booked a show at a dance hall with Corey, three-piece band with two speakers on a stick.
Yeah.
And we walked up to this dance hall.
So you were his road manager, but you started kind of finding him some gigs here and there. Hey, man, I can get you in here and there.
Yes.
Is that how it kind of started?
And then next thing you know, I booked Corey in 97. I picked up Owen Temple.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then...
The podcast's own Owen Temple.
Yes.
Been on many times.
Picked up Owen in 97, towards the end of 97, and I was still at school at A&M.
Mm-hmm.
Booking bands from a phone book.
Yeah. See, now, how was it back? I try to paint this picture a little bit for some of the young guys who listen to the show. It's almost hard to imagine. I can't. It's kind of like, how did I get along without a cell phone? I can't even remember. How did you book bands without the internet? That sounds really kind of stupid. But, I mean, I remember being in Austin thinking, how do you know what's going on in Lubbock? Do you read a local paper? How do you literally... You talk to other bands, of course, but it's just sort of mysterious. You just call the place forever until they answer the phone?
411.
Pretty much.
411. Information. And
can I speak to John? He's not here. When does he get in? He gets in at 6. And
it is interesting. I look back at that, and as you're asking that question, I was like, how did I do it?
Yeah.
I can remember a phone book, literally a phone book from a couple of different cities.
Well, then the Texas Music Office had that book.
Yes.
That was
helpful. That was it. It was a Texas.
They still put it out. It's a guide. But I want to say I didn't become aware of that till late 90s. I don't know if they always did that in the 80s.
I do remember Polestar and the Texas Music Office had a book and also information.
Right.
And then obviously as I got
Country Bars in Lubbock would be listed on there.
Then you'd call 100 of them. And I actually had, I didn't have, just got my first cell phone at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had
a big old brick Ericsson or something.
Yes, and I had a pager.
Yeah.
First was a pager and my phone in my apartment, and then I got the cell phone. $300 a month, unlimited minutes.
What a bargain.
Houston Cellular. I was getting away with murder. I was like, this is great.
Man, this is awesome.
What more can I ask for? Unlimited minutes.
Talk all you want.
Yeah, so that was the beginning. It was Corey and Owen, and then I picked up Chris Wall, Manders.
Yeah, Mark David Manders.
Houston Marchman, Tracy Lynn.
So this was like
this is the college years. This call us the college years.
So you were out of college by now.
This is the college years.
Oh, okay.
97, and I graduated in December 99.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 6.5 short years at A&M.
Yes.
And
Best years of your life.
Journalism major, made a 2.1. Never been more proud of it.
How did you do that?
I graduated with 121 hours.
Uh huh.
One more hour than I was supposed to, 6.5 years. So,
That explains the extra 2.5 years.
Yes, and I've traveled with Corey and Lynch to Lubbock, Texas, to the beer garden playing Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, down there at the depot.
Yes, with what was his name? Henry. Who's Henry up in Lubbock? You know who I'm. Pat's Corey's buddy.
Greg Henry.
Not Greg Henry.
Oh,
it's David Henry.
David Henry.
Yes.
Yeah.
David Henry, if you're listening, I love you. And there's a lot of stories that I've told at his house that we had.
But, you know, man, it's so weird to look back on that stuff. Because we were going up there to the depot, and there really was. The people you mentioned, now this is my perspective of it, which is clouded. But, you know, there was Corey and Pat and, like, me and Owen, Jack.
And
I mean, you could count them on two hands, couldn't you? I mean,
Robert.
But he was on a label. I mean, he had a deal. I'm talking like guys making their own CD, their own tape. And booking their own shows and driving around the state playing, trying to play original music. Now, we all played The Road Goes On Forever and stuff.
Yes.
But we were trying to be songwriters. And I know that there's a whole other...
There's a core
in Austin of songwriter guys. But I'm talking like the college thing.
The college was Pat, Corey, Jack. And at the time, Jack had... This was in 97.
See, Jack had a lot of success.
MCA Rising Tide.
That's right. He was... Steve Earle produced that record.
Yep. And so he had the big hit. This was
Record deal.
This is the big record.
Jack's going to be a huge star.
Yes. Yeah. And
that's happened to him like 5 times.
I think it's 6 times. Jack's always a star.
This is it for Jack, man. Yeah. This is it.
It's
a household
name.
He certainly has done great.
Puts a record out. Yeah. This is it.
Yeah. This is it.
Yes.
This is the record.
This is it.
So around this time, you've got a roster of artists.
I've got 7-8 bands.
So do you have some agents working for you at this point?
You know,
some guys
Troy
helping you book?
Johnson.
The podcast on Troy Johnson. See, you're the last guy to come on.
Yes.
So Troy Johnson comes on board.
And Troy,
in the early days,
I need a roommate. It was the last semester at A&M.
Uh-huh.
Had one more semester, and like one guy had an African American lit class. I'll never forget. So, anyways, I had 4 hours left, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I needed a roommate. So I told Troy, I said, look, I need a roommate, and I will pay your rent and your credit card bill.
Right.
And I need some help booking bands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Troy got introduced to the music business.
That's where you set him on the downward path.
That's
where
that was the beginning of the end with him.
Oh, gosh.
A marriage later for both of us. A child.
So you started Troy Johnson on this path.
Yes, I brought him down with me.
Way to go.
So
where were you? Did you have an office? Were you out of your room?
It was
here
out of my room.
Yeah.
It was out of my apartment.
Did you have a real fax machine?
I did.
Yeah.
That was the way to do it.
Yeah, that's
that
the only way to do the
contracts.
The only way to do it.
I don't think I had email. I didn't have email in college.
Well, and if you could, you couldn't attach documents. That was how do you do that?
I remember once a month. I hated it. I remember I had my girlfriend at the time. We would do mailing list.
Uh-huh.
So you do the mailing, and you put out all the tour schedule on a mailing list, and you would mail.
Like all the thousand or 2,000. Yeah. I mean, how did you have on the mailing list?
And then it would be a couple thousand.
But how would you ever alert people to where you're playing?
That's
the way I did. I did those postcards.
Yep, those were the postcards.
Oh, my God. Just cutting them up and sticking on the stickers.
And
it just took days to do it.
I remember the first website I went to was Pat and Robert's.
Uh-huh.
Pat and Robert had a website. I remember going into the computer lab at A&M and logging onto their...
Robert Keane?
Yep.
What did they have? What do you mean?
They
had
a website.
They each had their own page
Robert
or something?
Yeah, robertkeane.patgreen.com. And ironically enough, which I don't believe is a coincidence, but those were the two artists that took off the quickest, were the two artists that
Isn't
had
that right? You
websites.
Think so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Jack Ingram. And who did all those websites?
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy
Elliott. Mm-hmm. That's right, Jack's old road manager.
Yeah,
and computer savvy.
And Krager,
mm-hmm.
and he built Krager's website.
Right.
And so, and those were the first artists that really took off into what we'll call the Texas music stratosphere of the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's what, and in November, speaking of Roger, towards the end.
So when did you start?
November. It was November 99. He was debating between myself and Greg Henry.
Right.
And actually, I take that back. Greg was booking Roger for a couple months.
Well, Greg Henry was known for building Pat Green's career.
Yeah, I was there with Corey at the beginning.
Right.
Greg was there with Pat. So me and him were.
But
kind
you're
of
most
two.
You're most recognized here in the last 10 years
for Roger
for being with Roger Craiger.
So, Craiger,
so when did that relationship start? Was that
November.
Out of A&M?
Yes.
Was Roger still a student and or
he was? He was
older.
Graduating.
I mean, but he was banging around the tap and stuff and
yeah, absolutely.
Played
Bullwinkles in College Station.
Yeah.
So I picked up Corey and I quit working together in September of '99, and then I picked up Craiger in November of '99.
Let me back up here and interrupt you for a sec. Besides being a fan, besides you liked the music, you wanted to be close to it, did you see the potential of this as a business? Because, you know, all you heard about in those days was, man, Jack got $1,500 for playing at the SAE house. Like, you weren't talking huge money. I mean, maybe you're starting to around 99, late 90s, but I'm talking, did you see potential to like really have a legitimate business from booking bands? You're like, yeah, it's fun. It just gets me backstage. I make a little money. I don't know. What was driving you in those days?
I was doing TV. I was in television, ABC Sports, Fox.
What does that mean in College Station?
I mean, well, I was traveling with the British Open, the U.S. Open.
Oh, did you really?
Absolutely.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, so I went to Monday Night Football, college football, working production, behind the camera stuff.
Yeah.
From 94 through 90, through 2000. And I worked at a PBS station in College Station for a couple of years. So I was doing both and going to school.
Right.
So I got to the point where I picked up Roger in November 99. Uh-huh. And that's where I came to the crossroads of, you look at these guys and your question was, did I see the potential of the business
world?
I never really paid attention to it.
Well, you couldn't have seen what was coming.
I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Yeah, I wondered if I'm going to make a lot of money with on this thing.
I just took it. You know, it was moving so quickly and it was growing so fast.
You're just
fast.
Responding to demand.
Yeah,
people are calling for Roger. I'll get you in there. $500,
yep,
whatever.
And I was in. It was 1 month at a time, and it was after I graduated from A&M. That's when I came to the crossroads. I was like, I can't do both. I can't do television. Uh-huh. I was doing all the Rangers games for Fox.
Yeah.
And I was living up here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I just couldn't do both anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's when I chose to stay focused on music, and that's when Roger really started taking off. And that's where I really built my music career around from the blessing of Roger and him believing in me. And for 10 years, I worked with Roger.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but he was I started working with him in November 99, and I was carrying about four or five other bands at the time.
Right. The origins of the – it's funny because your experience was just, you know, a little like my own, just playing, you know, at that Todd Snyder, Jerry Jeff gig you booked. It was just – it was so early on in Owen back then and – you know, Corey playing at Pete's Piano Bar.
It was Owen and Corey. Yeah,
yeah, and the Back 40 in Austin, and I mean, it's so funny. So it's fascinating for me to just get you. But because I look back, like I'm always asking myself, man, what was I thinking back then? How come I played that show, and how come I didn't see this coming?
We were just a bunch of kids.
Just following blind.
It was like throwing darts.
Yeah, and you're just trying to survive and do the right thing that's in front of you, I guess.
And I look back, and I'm thinking, wow, we were just kids at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
We were in our, I mean, you look at the Jacks and Roberts of the world. They're in their, I mean, they're not, they're our age.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in our 20s.
Sure, yeah.
In a van and trailer. Living life.
No day job.
No day job.
Choosing our day job, I guess.
Well, yeah, and it's just like...
Wasn't that the whole definition of success? Is this your only job? I mean, that was just kind of...
Yes.
The threshold for me was just, man, Phil, what do you do for a living?
So when did you quit? When did you focus on nothing but... Liz, did you ever have a day job and do music, or have you always
done
music?
Yeah, I had a day job. I worked in Austin. I was a paralegal at a law firm from '95 to '97 or so. I was working a day job.
Yeah, I remember Corey was.
So it was after that.
Corey was
he had a job.
Carrier service or something.
Yeah, Yeah.
Yes.
They'd call me when he didn't show up for his gig at Pete's Piano Bar. So I'd go in there and play some of those Tuesdays. Well, man, we're going to have, with his good will and scheduling falling into place, we're going to have Matt Pivato. I want to just kind of get a little background here on his rise through the Texas music, burgeoning, building Texas music morass business back there in the early mid-90s. Well, thanks for coming in, Matt. Maybe next week, when we talk, I want to talk more about, get more into, you know, kind of, you know, the stuff you're doing with Craig Aaron when we start working with you and stuff. And I don't know. We'll compare memories on a lot of things.
Yes.
See how we do.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Matt Pivato on the Pete 2 Podcast at long last. Well, folks, that is our show for this week. Bless you all for hanging out with us. We hope you've had as much fun as we have had. Come back and join us next week. Matt Pivato will be here once again talking more booking, more Texas music history, and some of his future plans. Who knows what is going on? We're going to talk a lot of Texas music business in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned. Be good out there. We'll see you next week. Much tougher.